What is up, guys? It is your boy Jay. Hope you guys been keeping your foot on the pedal and staying metal, because that's what life is all about. And that's just the essence of human nature, man. That's what we do it for, man. Sometimes they ask who we do it for, but that's what we do it for, man. And that's just how it is, man. That's how it goes, man. Hope you guys have been having a great time. July 4th just passed. Hope you guys had some great adventures, great times with family or friends even, or with your spouse or with your love, with your partner. Hope you guys have just been fucking living it up, man. Shout out to the LGBTQ community. Hope you guys fucking had so much love and embraced everything and embraced America with all of the fucking free rights and freedom of speech and all this opportunity we have here, man. It's definitely a privilege for sure. And every time July 4th comes, just makes you realize that, damn, man, I actually have freedom of speech and all that stuff. So makes you definitely realize how blessed we are to be in America, because, you know, the ancient gods could have just said, hey, motherfucker, your mom's from Somalia, you're born here, dog, so just figure it out, dog, you know what I mean? But, you know, fortunately, that didn't happen. So we are here. We are live. And, of course, like the title of this episode, The Rise and Fall of Mice and Men. I really did not want to record this episode. And what I mean by that is that I felt a little emotional to do this episode, because I did not want to talk bad about Of Mice and Men. They meant a lot to me. I used to go to their shows all the time. I used to have their merch. They had some of the coolest merch, in my opinion. And they're just one of the legends in the game. They're not one of the modern day juggernauts, you know, like they used to be, but you know, doing episodes like this is very, very important, because people could be new to the scene that listen to my pod, and they need to know this. They're entitled, you know, to knowing these things, because if you're in the scene, you should know what greatness looks like and what the scene has potential to be. And you're only going to know those things by listening to the greatest songs of all time and records of all time. And you do that by starting with the one and only Of Mice and Men, because they've been there, they've done that, they've seen the mountaintop. They had one of the best drummers, one of the best guitars, one of the best basses, the best vocalists. They've had it all, man. And you know, shit happens, and you end up where they are now, you know, being able to make one decent song on an entire album, man. You know, it's pretty sad to see. And when I was doing this, and I was thinking about this, because I knew I did a Rise and Fall with a post-hardcore band not too long ago with Escape the Fae. I knew I wanted to do one with the metalcore band this time, obviously, for podcast reasons. But, you know, I wasn't really sure which band to do to continue this series going. But, you know, I figured Of Mice and Men, you know, just little thoughts in my mind. Just like I figured that they dropped off quite a bit. But then when I realized and I start doing the research, I realized, man, that they've dropped massively. And I hated to realize that, but that's just where we are, man. You know, life is but a moment of time. But their music did age really well. So if you are a millennial and you like modern day, I guess, metalcore, trust me, this music aged very well, so you would like this as well. But anyways, we're going to jump into it, man. The Rise and Fall of Mice and Men. Buckle up, because it's about to get real, dog. So just stay tuned, and here we go. The Rise and Fall of your boys, Of Mice and Men. So some background about the band. The band was founded by Austin Carlisle, who was the lead vocalist of Attack Attack from 06 to 08. And of course, he was the lead vocalist from Of Mice and Men from 2010 to 2016. Carlisle's vocal versatility and vicious, unclean vocals made him one of the greatest vocalists in the scene around the turn of about 2010. You know, the mere idea that you can have Austin and Shaylee together in a band was iconic, and their vocal synergy was, in my opinion, the greatest of all time, or one of the greatest. But we'll figure that out later on in the episode. We'll see where they place. And actually, doing this episode inspired me to do that list. But some of the great, they were one of the greatest couplets of all time. Clearly, Carlisle put up ads on MySpace to find more members and eventually found some from either online posts or former active members of bands who were just trying to get back in the scene. And the band will go on a tour with the who's who of the scene, including We Came as Romans, I See Stars, and August Burns Red for a few years. By the time they were an established commodity, Austin had health scares and was voted out by the band members. He would later return the following year after a small hiatus, with you know, someone replacing him, but he definitely came back the following year. Now we get into the cult classic albums here, man. We would be remiss if we did not talk about the cult classics. Yes, classics with an S. The band would see the mountaintop before the core was breaking up, with the cult classic albums like The Flood and the self-titled album. The core of Shaylee, David Arteaga, Austin, Jackson Hall, and Phil Monsala will go down as one of the legendary groups of all time as far as the band's concerned. Their eye-popping tunes and a core anyone would kill to see again, man. We would love to see all those guys together. Of course, motherfuckers like David Arteaga is still with the band. It's fucking insane. And when you have a discography that includes songs, you know, like the entire self-titled album, you know, being my personal favorite. But when you have songs on that album like Westbound and Down, and you know, you have an entire and practically an entire golden album like The Flood, with my personal favorite on that album being Purified, you become something of old icon status, you know, and never forgotten in the silence, man. The Rain would see more success, even though the core members would be shattered apart, with Shaylee leaving because of problems with alcoholism, with the album Restoring Force, which Shaylee was not a part of. Now, more about Restoring Force. You know, this album gave us hope, you know, thoughts that we could continue to hear sustained greatness, even though most of our favorites in the band had left. You know, Aaron Pauly unapologetically fit in with the band, I'm not gonna lie. And he wasn't planning on being second in line to Carlisle. You know, he fit in with the band, you know, when he was doing vocals, and he felt as though he was the guy, you know, even though him and Carlisle would share vocals. More bangers would arrive with Public Service announcement, Bones Exposed, and Never Giving Up. I was proud of the band for this accomplishment, considering we have seven bands plummet. It's been about seven bands that have plummeted really bad, much worse after a core breakup, and at times just completely break up altogether. But this was a major letdown. I'm not going to lie. Restoring Force was a letdown, in my opinion. Even though, like I said, you know, there were some bangers. So you thought that they could potentially get back to see that greatness that we once saw them see. The band went from almost entire albums having quality songs to a few quality tracks, which showed us the writing was perhaps on the wall. The reign of greatness was over, and unfortunately, it was over. And the band would go on to have about four more bangers over the course of four albums. I will repeat that. The band would go on to have about four more bangers over the course of four albums. Very sad. When researching and realizing this, by the way, which is still shocking to me, man. The third installment of the song series YDG, you know, which arrived as Forever YDG, and actually made me excited about them because, you know, I thought that that song would be great because, you know, the previous two songs were great. You know, it was on the album Defy. Definitely was a major letdown. That was that. Songs like Obsolete from their recent album Echo, songs like The Mountain, Gravedigger, and The Lie makes the band still worthy of following because, I mean, you just never know, right? I mean, anything could happen. We have seen those songs like I just named, so anything can happen. Obsolete is not a sleeper song. Obsolete is really fucking good, so anything can happen. I'm all about finding diamonds in the rough, baby. It's what I do. It's who I am. I don't mind it at all. I will find those fucking diamonds in the rough. You better believe that. And, you know, basically wrapping it up, you know, what can I say, man? David Arteaga continues to be one of the best drummers in the scene and an original member who's still with the band. Austin Carlisle would retire from music in 2016 over reasons of creative control lyrically and heart ailments. He's having heart problems. Shaylee went on to start the band Dayshell. That has been consistent, very consistent band. Actually had a maybe one or two songs that made the top 100 songs of all time in metalcore, which is an awesome fucking accomplishment. So shout out to Shaylee for actually being able to do that with his band. And, you know, life is just a moment in time, and the band will go down having those moments and memories that we'll always value. They may have taken a fall from greatness, but the story must be told. It must be etched in solidarity and epic proportion. The legends of old, of Mice and Men, the chapters of bliss, the essence of glory. May we one day be in hell with you guys of Mice and Men. And that's going to wrap up the summary of Mice and Men's rise and fall. They will go down as one of the greatest assembles of all time with what they were able to accomplish in that, in those few albums, man. And man, legendary. Can't be mad at them, can't complain. Just is what it is, you know, it happens. But that's gonna do it for that. Stay tuned, guys. We will be talking about the top five metalcore vocalist duos ever, which was inspired by doing this episode because, of course, they had one of the greatest duos of all time. So let's see who was the best. We need to know who was the best, and we will find out right after this. Stay metal. in the top five vocalist duos ever is what we're about to dive into, and trust me, it is fucking stone cold awesome. I had a very, very swell time researching this, doing this, really thinking about it, caring about it, and we'll see, man. We'll see if you guys want to slap me, or if you guys want to say I'm the greatest metalcore analyst of all time. We shall find out, baby. So, in descending order, and this was very, very difficult to do, man. This list was actually probably as hard to do as the post-hardcore top 100 songs of all time, and I left so many fucking quality songs out doing that list. And I should have did some honorable mentions, man. I'm gonna do an honorable mention for this, though. I'm definitely gonna do an honorable mention for this. I think I should. But at number five, the fifth greatest metalcore vocal duo of all time, we have Jeremy DePoister and Mike Hranica from, of course, The Devil Wears Prada, an absolutely iconic duo, specifically on the album, what was the album that they were fucking so iconic on, man? It was fucking insane. Let's see. I'm gonna have to, gotta get this right, man. I can't botch this. We're going to take a little bit of time to find that album. Got it on the top of my tongue. I just don't remember exactly which one that they did their best work on, which is the one that I want to get. So that album was Dead Throne. Yep, Dead Throne. That's where their most iconic work. You see them at their best on Dead Throne, working together, man. It was absolutely fucking insane. When you look at songs like the self-titled song Dead Throne, when you look at songs like Mammoth, when you look at fucking awesome songs like Pretenders and Born to Lose, all those songs, man, you see how great the combination was, and it was absolutely fucking iconic. Not to mention them fusing together on 818. Brilliant, clever, fucking marvelous fucking unity between those guys, and they absolutely deserve a spot on this list. Coming in at number four, we have Caleb Shomo and Johnny Frank. Now, I know this seems a little low for these guys because the fucking fantastic combination that they were, and they were. And I can understand if they're actually number one on your list, even though they're at number four on mine's, because they were such a great pairing together. It was absolutely insane. Johnny Frank, to me, elevated Caleb Shomo to seem as though he was literally the greatest metalcore vocalist in the scene just about at that time, man. And I'm going to be honest. Since Caleb's left and has been doing his own thing in Beartooth, I don't think he's a bad vocalist, but this is why they're that low, because I think Caleb's a very good vocalist. I don't think he's a five-star vocalist. You know what I mean? So you'll notice as the list gets shorter and I start getting into number three, two, and one, the unclean vocalist is a five-star unclean vocalist. Like, they're top of the food chain. They were absolutely fucking sick. And also, the clean vocalist was absolutely sick, and they're a five-star clean vocalist. And that's basically mostly how I did this. I didn't want to care too much about longevity as far as like them being together that long, because I just wanted to really speak to the magic of what these duos were able to actually produce together during that time that they were together. And I just wanted to focus more on that, because when you start getting into longevity, it's kind of, you know, it kind of gets a little biased, and I just didn't want to do that. I just wanted to speak to the magic. So, Caleb Shomo, I would say, is about a 4-star vocalist, and I would say that Johnny Frank was 5, so that's why they're so low, guys. But remember that they also was in Crabcore. So some of their talent was actually, you know what I mean? You following what I'm saying, right? Like, you're in Crabcore, so the production of the music can somewhat kind of, you know, take you to where you need to be, even if, you know, the vocals aren't that great. But they were fucking fantastic, man. Moving on to number 3, we have Andrew Rocco and Dave Escamilla, 2 insane vocalists, 5-star across the board, in my opinion. Although you could argue Dave is 4.5, he's kind of teetering between the two. Andrew Rocco, no doubt about it, 5-star vocalist. The work they've done together is absolutely insane. Crown the Empire, some of the best concept albums, some of the best concept songs, song titles. They've just absolutely fucking killed it in this scene and left a lasting impact. And just the duo between them, these two guys, like on songs like Johnny Rebellion, fucking Monster, fucking songs like fucking Oh Catastrophe, Makeshift Chemistry. Talk about chemistry. Their chemistry was fucking undeniably incredible on that song. The Fallout, man, just so many songs where their synergy was absolutely fucking insane. And, you know, you got to give them credit for that, man. They definitely killed shit, and they deserve to be up here. Like I said, with songs like Lead Me Out of the Dark, Johnny Ringo, they just have unreal chemistry. And shout out to those guys, man. They deserve, definitely deserve to be top 5. You can argue whether where they place, but they're definitely top 5 on any list. At number 2, we have, and I had to deliberate, these were the two hardest ones right here for me. This is where it gets really tricky, because these are like super clear-cut 5-5s. By that, both of the vocalists were 5-stars. No doubt about it. No question. No anything. This was a very, very difficult decision for me. But when it was all said and done, I had to put Tyler Carter and Michael Bond at number 2. Michael Bond is fucking brilliant. Everything this guy touches is fucking gold. He's done other projects. He's done very well with them. And in Issues, people thought I was crazy to say this, but I always thought Michael Bond was the best vocalist, and I always thought he was like the main reason Issues was so good. I personally thought that, like, even when I would go see their shows, I was more excited when Michael Bond's part came on, to be honest, man. I was just, I don't know, Michael Bond's my guy, you know what I mean? Like, Tyler Carter's great, of course. I mean, the guy's unbelievable. He's like an R&B singer in our scene. And it's like unfair almost, you know, that he's even with us. But because we honestly don't have anyone just from a pure vocal range standpoint that could really compete with Tyler Carter in our scene. But when you're talking about just straight up duos and how they fit together, they were just fucking absolutely insane, like on fucking songs like Stingray Affliction, Hooligans, that stands out, fucking King of Amarillo. These are all just fucking iconic unity songs that they came together on and just absolutely fucking killed shit. You think about Coma, you think about You think about fucking Rank Rider. You just think about so many iconic songs that they have actually done together. Love, Sex, Riot, insane fucking chemistry on that song. Man, it's just, man, we can go all day, man, with what these guys have done together. So we'd be talking all night, but they deserve that number two spot. I was so close to giving them the number one spot, but the number one spot goes to the guys that gave me the idea in the first place to do this fun exercise, and that would be Austin Carlisle and Shaylee Burgett. I mean, what a fucking duo. Of course, they're both five-star vocalists. They're at the top of their respective food chain. They did absolutely incredible. We all see what Shaylee's doing with Dayshell right now. They're fucking absolutely insane. And Shaylee can scream. Who would have known? The guy is absolutely fantastic all around. He was the greatest pure vocalist. I'm pretty sure it was clean vocalist, I want to say. Because I actually did an activity where I was just doing just a straight up vocalist. And I think I did it a few episodes ago where I was just rating the best vocalist. And I'm pretty sure he came in first. He came in first place. So no surprise here. Especially when it comes to clean vocals. Because I think Shaylee's voice is just so perfect for the scene. The shit that he's doing in Dayshell. The shit that Austin Carlisle brought to the band. One of the most iconic screamers ever to be in our scene. Absolutely fantastic. Sucks that he has his illness and his health issues, because the man was absolutely insane and probably would still be one of, if not the greatest unclean vocalists in the world. And it's funny because I say unclean, but what a lot of people don't know is that Austin Carlisle actually did cleans in Restoring Force. Austin Carlisle does some of those cleans in some of those songs, man. I can't think of the exact songs off of my head, but Austin Carlisle could actually do cleans, and that's what also makes this almost a no-brainer. Now, Michael Bond can do some cleans as well, but not like Austin Carlisle. And man, Austin Carlisle was just a phenomenal screamer. Just the way him and Shaylee played off of each other, like on songs like, and I promise you, it seemed like, and that's the thing about Of Mice and Men, like they use their screaming so much. Austin would just rip shit to shreds, man. He was the lead vocalist, and Shaylee would come behind him, but he did most of the vocals, man. And that's honestly what made them unique, is that because a lot of metalcore bands, especially I'm sure that you guys listen to, the clean vocalist does, or there's like more cleans than just in general than uncleans, but Of Mice and Men was not like that. They were all about the brutality, man, and songs like Westbound and Down, even Second and Seabreeze, the Ballad of Tommy Clayton and Raw Dog Millionaire, intense songs, man. Austin Carlisle was all over that, man. And with that being said, man, they deserve that number one spot. Going through the list again, at number five, we had Jeremy DePoister and Mike Hranica. At number four, we had at number four, we had Caleb Shomo and Johnny Frank. At number three, we had Andrew Rocco and Dave Escamilla. At number two, we had Tyler Carter and Mike Bond. And at number one, we had Austin Carlisle and Shaylee Burgett. And I also said I wanted to give an honorable mention. And the honorable mention, who was the honorable mention? on the combination between Shaylee and Austin, on also on songs like Ohio's on Fire, man, was absolutely incredible. Man, it was just fucking, just absolutely fucking insane. But, yeah, man, I also wanted to give an honorable mention, man, but I can't think of who was my honorable mention. I literally, like just had it in my head. Yes. The honorable mention goes to Levi Benton and Ryan Neff from Miss May I. Fucking awesome duo, awesome pairing, so many iconic songs together. Man, like, just so much shit that they had together was absolutely fucking incredible. Just songs that I could just think about, like Architects, A Dance with Eric Cara, fucking Gears, We Have Fallen. Their synergy on that song was absolutely insane. And even songs like Colossal, man. But shout out to them, man. They're awesome. They deserve to be on this list, just like all these other guys. To me, they just, you know what I mean? Like, they're probably like Levi Benton, I would probably consider him, on that like tedious line of like 4.5 and 5 as a unclean vocalist. And Ryan Neff, I would consider him like 4 to 4.5. He's definitely not a 5. So it was kind of like, you know, from a numbers when I calculated it, you know, in my head mentally. You guys don't need to be doing all the nerdy stuff that I do. Who cares? It's just all stuff that nerds do. But anyways, all you guys care about is who I have and how you can argue about it. So with that being said, thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing to the podcast. Stay tuned. Had a lot of fun doing these recent episodes. We will catch you guys soon. Make sure you don't forget to leave a voicemail. Leave the voicemail link. My social medias. Don't be afraid, man. Reach out. Let me know what you agree with, what you don't agree with, whether voicemail or social media. And stay tuned, man. Stay tuned. We definitely got some more stuff to come out. Be covering some singles and things of that nature. But I also did want to mention about Monuments and Holofront quickly before I get out of here. So, of course, I said I wasn't going to like analyze the whole albums because they've been out for a decent little while now. So, didn't really want to get too deep into them because I'm pretty sure you guys have already got your fix with those albums. But, so yeah, Monuments album, wanted to cover that really quick first. The album Stasis, a very, very anticipated album, one of the most anticipated albums of the year for me because of how much potential I know Monuments has to have a cult classic fucking album. And it was one of those albums that it lived up to the expectations, but it wasn't like an absolute banger. And that's another reason why I didn't really want to fully cover it. But, you know, with additional songs, because like, the singles, we already knew about the singles with Mick Gordon and songs like Lavos and Animus. Those were fucking great songs, but they added some additional solid songs like No One Will Teach You. Another song like Opiate, which was one of my favorite on the albums. Opiate, I really like Opiate a lot. But yeah, man, very solid album. Can't complain about the album. Is it a classic album? Nah, not really. Is it a cult classic? Definitely not. Is it a very, very quality album where you can actually re-listen to it? Yes, it is a very good quality album. If I had to rate it, I would say it is a... I want to say 3.5, but I also want to say 4. So I guess we'll just round it to 4, man. I'll probably give it a 4 out of 5. Very solid album, you know, very solid album. It's as good as Volume's albums this year. It's as good as a lot of albums this year. It's just a very solid album, especially, like I said, including the singles. And also, Hollowfront, I was actually really anticipating this album as well, which the name of the album, of course, is The Price of Dreaming. The songs that stood out to me on that album, which actually really, really stood out, especially In the Spotlight. I fucking love that song. 5-star song, in my opinion. Just takes you on a journey. Love that fucking song. And Self-Sabotage, also a great, fantastic song that you guys should check out. But those are two of the bangers on that album. If I was rating that album overall, I would say it's a 3 out of 5. Very solid album. Again, not a cult classic. Again, not a classic, but definitely an album that, you know, can get the juices flowing. Not a bad album. A little bit of replayability to it, but, you know, very solid album nonetheless. But that's pretty much gonna wrap it up. You know, like I said, check out all the don't be afraid to reach out, keep your foot on the goddamn pedal, and stay metal. I'm out. Peace.